It's Chris Davis.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, so you go to a lot of football games. Do you enjoy the amenities, the concourses, the concessions? Do you enjoy eating at the game is basically what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, we usually do. We hit up chicken finger and fries combo, or forgetting the other thing. But yeah, we usually eat at the games.
Yeah, you get a little snack, a little nosh, and just to kind of tide you over until you get home. I'm normally that way too. I'll grab a hot dog, maybe. Sometimes I've grabbed poutine. I've sampled some of the different things.
Yeah, poutine. That's it. That's the one.
Oh, you guys have poutine out there?
Oh yeah.
How good is it?
It's pretty good. Good.
How can you really screw a poutine? It's fries, gravy, and cheese curds. If you can't do poutine right, then you can't cook anything.
Yeah, you can get the hell out of here if you can't do that. Right.
So I've sampled some of the different wares that Tim Hortons Field has had to offer over the last couple of years. But this past weekend, I came across something that I don't know how many of our Hamilton-based listeners have enjoyed, but holy smokes, man. I got this brisket sandwich from one of the Lou's barbecue pits at Tim Hortons Field. I swear to you, this thing was the size of my forearm. It was massive, and it was delicious. It's $15, so it's kind of expensive, but I kid you not in saying that it kept me fed throughout the entire game. I didn't finish it until probably midway through the fourth quarter because it was just so big. It's messy. Don't get me wrong. You need a crap ton of napkins in order to keep all the – because they throw the meat on there, and then they sprinkle some barbecue sauce and some jalapeno cheddar cheese on there. It's a good time, but you definitely need to up the napkin game because you will have sauce all over your face.
It's good to hear that they have some good options at Tim Hortons Field, because like we were talking about before we started recording, I remember that the food at Ivor Wynne wasn't that spectacular. So I'm glad they upped their game in the new stadium.
Yeah, for sure. And these barbecue pits, they're outside of the regular concession stands. And like the hot dogs and the sausages and that stuff aren't great. There is a chicken finger and fry combo that they have at Tim Hortons Field that is actually really good. The poutine's pretty good. They have some good concessions there, but the regular football food isn't so great. But this sandwich knocked my socks off. They have other barbecue pits around the stadium that serve hamburgers and different footlong hot dogs. Maybe I'll give one of those a try someday. But topping this brisket sandwich, man, it's going to be tough. Me and my dad and my brother and my nephew went, and we get there early. We get there relatively early. We like to, we make a day kind of going to these games. My dad's a season ticket holder this year, as I've mentioned before, and we just have a great time. We get down early to the games. We're hanging out. My dad loves looking at all like the personalities that you see at games. There's guys who, like the Box J boys, they wear their kilts, but there's people who, this guy who brings puppets to the game, and there's another guy who wears like striped, black and yellow striped overalls, and he just loves looking at all the people that come to these games. It's like, oh, I know that guy because I recognize this. And he just gets a kick out of it. It's the first time he's ever been a season ticket holder. He's absolutely loving it. So we get down to the game early, and we're sitting in they have this Coors Light banquet bar. And we were hanging out in there, drinking a couple beers, eating our sandwiches. Fans are coming by going, where the hell did you get that sandwich from? Which is exactly how we got turned on to the sandwich. About a month ago, we're sitting in the bar having a couple beers, eating some food, and we see a guy with a giant tinfoil thing. We're like, where'd you get that from? And he told us, and that's kind of what turned us on. So now we've turned on other fans. My brother went to the regular concessions to get my nephew some pizza, and the people behind the counter are like, what the hell is that you're holding? And my brother's like, it's a giant brisket sandwich. We got it over there. Like, they had never seen it. They're like, it's massive. So I'm hoping that as someone paid it forward to me way back in early October, I can pay it forward to other people who are listening to the show. Hit up the Lou's Barbecue Pit and try yourself one of those brisket sandwiches. Even at $15, I know it's expensive, but trust me, you will be well fed and you will enjoy yourself.
Well, only one more opportunity to stuff that sandwich in your face. So if you're going to the game, you'll have to check it out on Sunday.
Yeah, and the giant sandwich was about the only good thing, really, that I can think of from that game. Let's just get right into this now, talking about the Ticats losing another one. This was a meaningless game, as we talked about last week, but they lose to the Owls 32-25, and they finished the season at 7-11. 7-11, that's unacceptable. That is absolutely unacceptable. This team is too talented. There is too much, like the coaching staff. This team should not be finishing four games under 500. I don't care that they finished in second place. 7-11. This is harkening back to the dark days of the mid 2000s. This is simply unacceptable that this team would finish with a record this poor.
Yeah, it's Very disappointing. It's such high hopes at the start of the season. The first game of the season, you're like, damn, Mazzoli looks great. The whole team looked awesome. And it's just been so up and down, mostly down this season. And it's been tough to watch. But, regular season record be damned because it's the playoffs now. But I agree with you. It's unacceptable. A team led by Coach Ken Austin and the coaching staff that's been together for several years now. Yes, they lost their offensive coordinator at the start of the season, but it's still the same system. I'm almost positive about it. So I think that they just were maybe overconfident in the offseason and didn't bring in the right pieces to replace guys. And it showed this whole season.
My problem with this team is that they started off relatively well. They were 3-2 heading into their bye week, if I'm not mistaken. They got through the early part of the season where we thought they would struggle. That is where we thought that they would have issues. It would have been when Caleros was hurt. We thought, okay, this team, if they can get to 500, and they did. They were 3-3 when Zach Caleros came back. That was our stated goal at the beginning of the season. You can go back and listen to our season preview episode where we talk about this. We say if they're 500 at the 6-game mark when Caleros comes back, this team's gonna make something of it. And since then, they have not. They've just been bad. And we can talk about injuries, we can talk about one coaching change, we can talk about the loss of veteran players, but that didn't affect them as much at the beginning of the season as we thought it would. And you would think that a team would get better as the season progresses. This team somehow got worse. And yes, they dealt with a number of injuries to key players that hurt this team. But we saw a couple years ago the Calgary Stampeders go through like 900 offensive linemen, and they don't skip a beat. We see them year in, year out lose players to the NFL. Eric Rogers goes, bam, Tavares Daniel steps up. It's like time after time we see a team like Calgary, and I know it's foolish to compare the Ticats to that team, but that's the team that you want to emulate. And this team, yes, they lost veteran players. Yes, they lost one very well-regarded, talented coach, but they still should have not been able to finish the season with such a poor mark. This was, at worst, this team should have been 9-9. And even then, if we were sitting here at 9-9, I'd be okay with it based on how the season played. But at the beginning of the season, if you would have sat here and told me this team is 4 games under 500, I would have said, I don't care where they finish. That's unacceptable. Completely unacceptable. It just makes no. I know the East Division was down. I know every team in this division dealt with quarterback issues. I understand that. The Ticats should be better than this. Point blank, simple.
Yep, Mazzoli was in there, and we were a 500 team. Claros comes back, and we're below 500. But to me, it comes down to the too much shuffling in the secondary, injuries at receiver, and the offensive line isn't good enough. That's the three key areas, in my opinion, that were the downfall of this regular season. Now they've been trying to improve that over the last couple of weeks in the secondary, offensive line, all that, but it might be a little too late for that. The secondary is just, there's no cohesion. It's just every week it's different players in different positions, and it's going to be tough. I'm not going to get too much into the next game here, but that defensive line is going to have a hell of a game to take some pressure off the secondary because they're not that good.
I couldn't agree with you more, Mike. Let's get into this game specifically, this loss against the Owls. Let's kick it off as we always do with some talk about how the offense performed. What were some of your takeaways from this, pal?
Well, I thought that Caleros looked better than he has in the last couple of weeks, the last couple of starts. I thought he was only in there for I don't know, about a quarter, was it?
Yeah,
I think.
I if memory serves me correctly, Jeff Matthews came on the last play of the first quarter. So he basically we can say he played the first quarter of football.
You can't take away a lot from 1 quarter, but he was 8 for 12, 134 yards. Should have had a touchdown pass to Mike Jones, but he just dropped the ball. He went right off his hands. It was a bad drop by him. But I thought he moved the team well. I thought he used his receivers well. I thought there was a good connection there between him and the new guys, Kevin Elliott and Junior Collins Jr. And even that Brian Timms guy. I mean, he only had 4 catches for 33 yards, but not bad. So that was a little encouraging seeing Calero slinging the ball again. So I was happy about that.
Yeah, I was too. I thought his performance, if there's one thing to take from this, from the offense for me in a positive light, it is how he looked almost like the player we saw before the knee injury last year. He was moving the pocket, he was escaping rushers, he was extending plays, and then he was finding open guys. It almost looks like he's back to being comfortable controlling this offense. And that to me is a big thing with we can talk about how bad some of the other areas of this team are, but if he is on his game and he is playing like the MOP he could have been last year, this team can make some noise in the playoffs. And there wasn't much to take away from this game because, as we've said numerous times, it was basically a glorified preseason game. The one thing I will take, Montreal was not playing this game like a preseason game. They were playing it. There were guys out there that were playing hard. They wanted to make a statement. They wanted to get themselves set up for jobs with this team next season. They played their game. The Ticats maybe took it a little easy and didn't play. Jeff Matthews played the last three quarters, and I'm sure you'll get into him in a bit. But what I took away from this is that Zach Collaros looks to be the player that we saw last year. And if he is, I'm at least breathing a little easier today than I would have been if he would have gone out there and gone like 6 of 13 for 95 yards and interception and kept getting hit as like he had been before. So I'm a little bit happier than I should be with a loss based on his performance in this game.
Yeah, and he wasn't making dumb decisions like he seemed like he has been in the last couple games. He, you know, was making his reads, going through his reads, making the right passes, and you know, it was only one quarter, but no turnovers. So that's a good thing. I thought that the young receivers that are newer to this group played a decent game, especially Jasper Collins. I mean, he had his biggest game of his career, I would bet, 6 receptions for 95 yards. You know, his longest catch was 40 yards, so that's a big gain. And I think that there's some talent here, even with all those injuries at the receiving corps. They got Collins and Elliott and John Chiles. You know, maybe they can work in Brandon Banks a little bit more. You know, Claros is pretty familiar with him. But, you know, after Claros came out, it wasn't that great offensively. So I'm just hoping that, like you said, he's the player that he was last year, because I think we're going to have to put up a lot of points in this playoffs, because the other teams are going to put a lot of points up on us.
Yeah, the Ticats have been allowing way too many points, 32 in this game. Pretty much 30 almost every game the last few weeks. It's been pretty ugly defensively when it comes to trying to get teams not to score the in the game. Just been bad stuff. Speaking of bad stuff, I think you're going to be in agreement with me. I did not see much out of Jeff Matthews in this game. He looks to me like the exact same player we saw last year. He's tentative with throwing the football. He holds onto it way too much. He got crushed a number of times, especially early, when he just held onto the ball. And I know the offensive line is going to take a bit of a butt kicking because they did not play a particularly great game. But when your quarterback is holding onto the ball as much as Matthews was, the line can only block for so long. What did you take away from Matthews' performance? Because I just think he's the same player we saw last year, and we now know who he is as a football player.
Yeah, not very impressive. I mean, if you look at the numbers, 18 and 29, 201 yards, TD and interception, 62% completion percentage. I mean, those aren't terrible numbers, but you just watch this guy and you're like, eh, you know, he's not going to be a starter anytime soon in the CFL or at any point, I don't think. Ken Austin brought him in because he was familiar with him. I'm sure he thought that he had a bunch of talent, but he's just underwhelming as a quarterback, in my opinion.
That's exactly how I would put it, too. You have to have a smile on your face at least once on offense late in the game. CO Prime's big catch and run. That made you a little happy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's good. It's good to see the fullbacks get in there. What's his face in BC? He had a pretty big gain as well. Here's the name, the fullback in BC.
Rolly Lumbala?
Yeah, he's been there forever. And, you know, he has some speed to him, too. So it's always good to see the fullbacks get a chance to do their thing, because they're not used very much. They're not even in formations very much. So to get them on the field is always nice.
What I liked out of this game is seeing guys that don't normally get a chance to contribute, get kind of a star-making moment. Mercer Timmis had, it was a small play, but he had a 14-yard catch, I believe, and he ran over a defender to pick up the first down, and the crowd kind of exploded. He's a local kid from Burlington. His great-grandfather, Brian Timmis, was who the soccer stadium that was adjacent to Ivor Wynne Stadium was named after. Like, that was the one takeaway I kind of had from this overall. Even with the loss, it was like, we got to see some of these guys that we don't normally get to see contribute. Timmis, obviously, Prime, another candidate. You mentioned Brian Timms. I thought he had a pretty good game. I thought his touchdown catch was actually rather spectacular.
Yeah, I liked what I saw from him. Now, I don't believe we'll see much of him in the playoffs, but maybe a future Ticats starting receiver.
Yeah, I think they wanted to get a look at him to see maybe he could play in the playoffs, or if he's a guy that they might have some interest in bringing in next year. The one thing you say about the Ticats, they always seem to find these under-the-radar guys. Terrence Tolliver was one of those guys who I remember as a rookie last year came in and was starting with the ones right away, and it was like, okay, I remember this guy from LSU, and okay, I remember him being a pretty decent receiver, but he wasn't someone that I was overly familiar with, and he started from day one, had a hell of a rookie season, and maybe Timms can be one of those guys who can parlay this opportunity late in the season in a meaningless game here, to be honest with you, and turn it into something. Anthony Woodson was another guy in this game that he scores a touchdown, his first in like forever. I just liked seeing some of these under the radar guys get their chance to shine. And again, it's a loss. It sucks. This team is very bad right now, but we got a chance to see some of the lesser known guys get a little bit into the game and get the fans on their side. And I think these guys are always usually fan favorites. So it was nice to see that happen.
Yeah. It's like a preseason game in the regular season. You know, you get a look at, what might be the future for the Ticats.
And Kevin Elliott, man, I can't say enough about this guy. He was the third on my list. I think he was the same with you, third on your list out of the big three when they were released that we wanted to see here. But out of the three guys that were released, he's the one that's made the biggest impact on his new team. He got in there through injuries, obviously. But, man, this guy every week is producing. Touchdown his first week. He's had a two-point conversion catch in each of his last two. This guy's a pretty darn good football player, and I think this guy has a bright future here in Hamilton, honestly.
Yeah, he's been great since he's been in there. You know, you look at the other two guys. Gurley, he hasn't contributed much to the Winnipeg offense, which surprises me. I thought that he would be used a lot, but maybe they're saving him for the playoffs. Who knows? But I guess they got that one receiver back that's been injured all year.
Darvin Adams.
So he's a similar body type. I think he's like 6'4". But yeah, I was expecting more out of Gurley and I was expecting Hazleton to get some time too. Now maybe they're saving him for the playoffs as well. Maybe they're not even going to use him because that Zylstra kid has been pretty darn good in Edmonton. So, yeah, I've been overjoyed with how Elliott's played. He's been one of the bright spots of this team for the past 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. So you are our resident offensive line guy. You always love when it's your time to do the O review. You always love talking about the offensive line. What was your takeaway on the O-line in this one?
It was not that great. I didn't focus as much on the tackles as I have been in the last couple games. So, you know, it just seems that they always collapse. The pocket collapses sooner than other teams. I think that we have talent on the offensive line, you know, Bombin and Diakowski and Revenberg and all those guys as good Canadians. And I think Fulton's a solid tackle. Was Campbell playing at right tackle this week again?
He was. They started a ton of Canadians elsewhere, like Justin Capicotti started, because they sat a bunch of guys, right? Like Terrell Davis was a starting middle linebacker. So there was a bunch of guys that sat, and that's why they ended up – I think they went well over the ratio in starting Canadians, especially at one point. I think there was six on offense. I think Timmis was back there, Jones, Watt, and then you had the three offensive linemen. So they just ended up playing, because a lot of the depth guys are Canadians, they just ended up playing a lot of them. But yeah, I'm pretty certain that Campbell did start at right tackle.
Well, you know, Simmons had a bad, not a very good go of it this year, but I'm thinking maybe they should kick him out at right tackle to take Campbell's spot, because I think this guy's just too inexperienced to go into the playoffs as a starter.
I couldn't agree with you more. My hope, as I said last week, was that Revenberg would start at right tackle because of the injury to Fantuz, unfortunately. They need to start a Canadian somewhere else. My belief is that offensive line against Ottawa looked really, really good. Revenberg could start there. Although Simmons at right tackle, I think, makes a ton of sense, too. They have to make a ratio change elsewhere. But I just don't like Campbell. I just don't. I don't think he's performed well enough to start in a playoff game, like you said.
Yeah, I don't think he's ready. I don't think he's ready to be a starter in the CFL. So they got to figure it out. They got to make some big decisions this week because it's not going to be easy against that Edmonton D line.
No, and this is it's win or go home. We're in literal must win territory. So it's do or die now. And this team's got a lot of questions to answer, but we will get into that a little bit later. Defensively, I got some stuff I'd like to talk about. I'm going to start with the good first. We finally saw this team start to force turnovers and make big plays on defense. The Keon Raymond strip of Nick Lewis was beautiful. Just like I've wanted to cheer for this guy for so long. He was in Calgary all those years, making big plays, making big key momentum turning plays. He finally got a chance to do that for the Ticats. He makes a strip of Lewis. The Ticats go down and score a touchdown on the very next drive. Like, this is the reason they brought him here, to make these plays. I can't wait to see him. I wanted to see him against Edmonton the last time these two teams played. I think that his presence on this defense can make a difference, and I thought he had a hell of a football game last Saturday.
Yeah, him and Elliott have been the best two signings that they've had in the past 5 or 6 weeks. He's come in, and he had that injury, and he was out for a game or two, but every time he's been in there, the first game that he played, he made a couple of great tackles in the backfield. It was like one-on-one, and he went down and just took out the player's legs with his arm for a loss. So this guy's been making plays his whole career, and he continues to do it. I mean, Nick Lewis is a big, big, strong dude, and I'm sure it's not easy to get the ball away from him, and he did that. So I've been really high on him since he signed in Hamilton. I've been high on him, you know, this year when he was in Toronto. So let's hope that he can make some big momentum switching plays in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I hope that he is here for longer than just the rest of the season. I just enjoy watching him play, and it's really nice for him to be on the good side for once. The other good thing that I took away from this game is this defense, at first, that first quarter, they were magnificent. They did not allow a first down until well into the second quarter. But then after that, the wheels completely fell off and Vernon Adams picked them apart. And again, it goes back to the secondary. They just can't cover a goddamn thing. Vernon Adams threw 3 touchdowns in this game. Vernon Adams. Look, he might end up being a great player down the line, but he's not one right now. I don't care that they're 3-0 with Adams as starting quarterback. Quarterback wins are meaningless as far as I'm concerned. They have a great defense in Montreal. But Vernon Adams should not be throwing for 3 touchdowns against anybody. And for the Ticat defense to allow this to happen is absolutely pathetic. 2 of those touchdowns came to Sam Giguere. He of 10 career touchdowns coming into this game, he catches 2 in this one, beats Cassius Vaughn on one, beats Chris Davis on the other. And if you can't cover Sam Giguere, how the hell are you going to cover Darrell Walker in a playoff game? Like, this secondary scares the bejesus out of me with how poor they have been throughout the entire season, but especially in a game like this where they were the starters out there. It wasn't backup crews. Emmanuel Davis was really the only guy in the secondary that didn't start that's a tried and true starter, but just another poor performance from the secondary.
Yeah, and Giguere the night before was getting his knee drained at the hospital. I mean, this is unacceptable. And for Vernon Adams to have 3 touchdowns is crazy. But for the Alouette offense to put up 30, well, I guess that Steph Logan had a touchdown. But for the Alouette offense, the Alouette team to have 32 points against this Hamilton team is just disgraceful. I mean, how many points are the Eskimos going to put up next week? I mean, if the Alouettes put up 32, how many points are the Eskimos going to put up?
Exactly. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm pretty certain. I will check, but I'm pretty certain the Alouettes were the lowest scoring team in the CFL this year. Let's look at the numbers. We got Montreal. Oh, no, it was Saskatchewan. The Alouettes were the second lowest scoring team in the CFL this year. They tied with the Argonauts, and we know how bad the Argos were as well. 32 points. Yeah, whether the points came on special teams or what have you, they allowed 3 touchdown drives, and they allowed Vernon Adams to throw 3 touchdowns in a game. You just can't have that. If Vernon Adams can rip apart this defense, what's Mike Riley going to do? Like, and this is where it all comes down to. I'm just concerned about how this team will perform in a big game and against a team that has a championship pedigree with talented players around the board that is on fire right now. It worries me. It worries me a lot.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm going to be watching, and I'll be cheering on the team, but yeah, I have my doubts if they're going to actually advance to these finals.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time in this review talking about what's to come. Yeah. But it's hard to really get too up or down about this performance in this game because of its meaninglessness. But let's move on to some special team stuff. I think we got to give a hat tip to Brett Maher. He went 3 for 3 on field goals. Maybe that mental block that we were worried about him having, he surpassed that. He hits from deep. I think he had a 51-yarder in this game. So the worries that if he has to make a big kick in the playoffs are still there, but this was a nice way to go into the playoffs with a performance like this.
Yeah, it's more like the Brett Maher that we've seen most of the season. Now he's had some hiccups, we know, but 3 for 3, longest 51 yards. That's pretty good. I have confidence in him. I think that he'll make the kicks, but you just never know, especially with if the wind's swirling at Tim Hortons Field, and it's just tough to kick there when that wind is bouncing around.
The other areas of special teams, though, that we need to talk about that we've given a little short shrift to this year because they're not exactly sexy topics, but I thought the coverage units were atrocious in this game. They allowed a return TD to Steph Logan. They gave up a couple other big returns. And I think the blocking, the return team blocking, the punt block team is bad. Like, how many times did we see Brandon Banks field a punt and there were 2 to 4 Alouettes like already in his face without anyone coming close to throwing a block to spring him? We talked about Banks being underwhelming this year, and he's gone a while without a return touchdown, but he can't do it all by himself. He can't go 1-on-12 and beat him every time. You're going to get killed out there. He's doing the best he can, and we saw him get visibly frustrated with some of the goings on the return units. But I think these two areas, again, are areas of concern.
Yeah, Banks is still has that top end speed. I believe I think he can still make, spectacular returns, touchdown returns. But like you said, the blocking isn't there. If there's no holes to go through, then the best returner of all time, Gizmo back there, it wouldn't matter because there's nowhere to go. If they're not opening up holes for the returners, there's nothing they can do about it. So it's been disappointing. I'm sure we've lost some key contributors on special teams over the years, some good blockers that have paved the way for Brandon Banks, making it look easy for all these years. So, I've been underwhelmed with the coverage units and the blocking in front of Banks. It's just been not good at all this year.
4 returns for 19 yards, a long of 11 for an average of 4.8 yards. They have to give you 5 yards. You would think at worst, with them giving you 5 yards, that you would be able to get 5 yards. You know what I mean? It's like in short yardage, when they give you a yard, you think, oh, it's 3rd and inches. More often than not, you should be able to get that. You should be able to get that first down, that 1 yard. So he has a long of 11, which means on his 3 other kicks, he had 8 total yards. 8 yards on 3 punt returns. I'm almost at a loss for words. I have to laugh because of how poor that is. Like, that we're talking about Brandon Banks here. He is still one of the premier return men in this game. He is, if he's not your number one, he's your number two or number three. He's still a great player. Like you said, he's still got that blazing speed. But holy hell, man, this guy just, he can't do it alone. And he, special teams has been a key contributing factor to a lot of Ticats wins over the last few years. And this year they've just been terrible, period. And it comes down to things like the return units aren't blocking for him, and the coverage units are not tackling anyone. They are going against everything that we've seen them do the last few years. And again, going into the playoffs, these are things that are going to come and bite them in the ass. Troy Stoudemire is a very good return man. He tends to put the ball on the floor a little bit too much for people's likings, but if he gets a hole in a crease, he can take it the distance. And I don't know, man. It's just another thing to add to the laundry list of worries going into this playoff game.
Yeah, and it's not even about touchdowns. It's about field position. If the offense is starting at their 45-yard line or the 50-yard line, it's a hell of a lot better than starting at the 15 or 20-yard line. It makes a huge difference in the CFL game. So we need help. We need help from everyone. We need everyone to contribute to make a run in the playoffs, and that's not happening right now.
All right, let's wash this one out of our system. Game's over. This team's going to the playoffs. We're going to get into our previewing that in a little bit. But we got some news we got to talk about. There's very little on the Ticats front, but there is some on the Hamilton front. A report from Three Down Nation came out this week that the city of Hamilton is not expecting to host a Grey Cup until at least 2019. At first, this kind of pissed me off. The stadium has now been open since 2014. There are still issues with it, which is sad and pathetic in its own right. But 5 years before they host a Grey Cup, the Argos get into BMO and they have it that year. Winnipeg's got it 2 years after their barn opened. So I just think that Hamilton should have got it earlier than this. That said, when I thought about it more, I thought if they're going to wait and take their time and get it right, I'm okay with it. And 2019 as a year works for me, 5 years after the stadium opened. But it's also, and this was brought to my attention, the 150th anniversary of professional football in Hamilton. I think that would be a really cool celebration, a milestone to celebrate in conjunction with hosting a Grey Cup. But mostly out of this is that if they can just take their time and get it right and show all the naysayers out there that Hamilton can be a good Grey Cup host city, I'd rather take my time and wait than to rush it just to get one here for the sake of getting one here.
Yeah, you got to get it right. And like you said, there's been some problems with Tim Hortons Field, and you know, but there was problems with Investors Group Field as well. So yeah, it sucks that it might not be till 2019. But I think that Hamilton can be a great host city. You know, Hamilton's a good football town. There's a lot of fans of the Ticats in Hamilton. I think that, you know, if Regina can hold one with the amount of hotel rooms, then Hamilton can too. There, you know, there may not be a ton of hotel rooms in Hamilton, but the surrounding area is huge. And I know that people don't want to travel too far to get to the festivals and all that, but if need be, people can stay, you know, slightly out of town to take in the Grey Cup Festival. So I think it's well overdue. You know, 1996 is a long time ago, 20 years ago. So I hope that it comes as soon as possible, but if it's not till 2019. I know some people are pissed off and some fans really want it here. They say, why is it in Toronto? It can't be in Hamilton, but make it as spectacular. Take your time. Make it as spectacular as you can and make people walk away saying that was a hell of a Grey Cup, and make the league take notice, and maybe we'll get some more in the future in Hamilton.
Well, I think the Ottawa experiment with how they're doing all their things by Lansdowne, and we talked about this, whether it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, whenever the news broke that they were going to do all their events at Lansdowne in the Lansdowne area, and how that's nowhere near any of the hotels in the city and how commutes will be necessary there. I think that'll be a good barometer, because if people are willing to stay in Ottawa and take 20 to 25 minutes to get to the festivals, then you can stay in Burlington and take the same amount of time to get to the festivals. And the thing that I think outsiders don't understand about Hamilton is that this is not the same Hamilton that existed in 1996. You go to the downtown core now, and it's a lot different. You go to James Street North. I went there a couple weeks ago for dinner with some friends. That place is pretty freaking cool. There's some really cool things down there. It's not the idea of the Gage Park, the Gore Park area of homeless drug addicts. Like, the reputation Hamilton used to have amongst a lot of people, that's not there anymore. You got James North, that is a beautiful place for people to go and enjoy a meal and enjoy some of the things that they have down there. Lock Street is the exact same, a little further out, but still in the downtown-ish area. Some great stuff there, restaurants and stuff. Hamilton has really started to transform itself, and it's nowhere near complete, but there's some pockets, especially downtown in the city, which are near the hotels. The Sheridan's down there, there's other hotels down there. That makes this an area that could be, I stress, could be very appealing to people from out of town. And I think people who have this notion of Hamilton being this steel city, blue collar, will be interestingly surprised when it comes to a Grey Cup being hosted here, because it's going to happen sooner rather than later. Like, Hamilton's not going to go another 20 years without hosting Grey Cup. People are going to be coming to Hamilton for this. And I think, and I will be promoting this when people come here, hit up James North, hit up Lock Street. You're going to find some really cool stuff down there. And they're going to see that Hamilton's not the Hamilton that they think it is.
Yeah, it's not the same as it was, say, 10, 20 years ago, right? It's not the steel city that it used to be. I mean, there was a lot of closures and stuff, if I'm correct. And, you know, I think McMaster has been a big part in that city. That I think that's a great university, even though I know that you're not a big fan of McMaster.
But I will give it credit. It has played a part in transforming the city that I love. So I may hate their football team, but I respect their school.
Yeah, and every city has its bad parts. It's just the way that it is. There's going to be scary spots in every major city. So I think that I haven't been to Hamilton in a while, but I always enjoyed when I went there. So I think that it's changed quite a bit in the last couple of years.
It really truly has. It really has. Like, I wouldn't say this without being being confident. And I, again, this one of, when I went for dinner a couple weeks ago, it was one of the first times that I'd actually really looked at the James Street North area. And it's a hell of a play. Like, it's, they've done a great job, and they deserve to be recognized for what they've done to try to transform the downtown area of the city from a place that people did not like to go into a place that people want to go. I'm going out, we record this on Monday. I'm going out tomorrow with friends to a new restaurant down there to check it out, because it's just a nice area. It honestly is just a nice area. So I think people need to get the idea of the old Hamilton, the dirty, the grimy, the blue collar. They need to get that out of their heads and start seeing the city for what it is and not what it used to be. That's it for Ticat stuff, really, though, Mike. There have, however, been some major developments across the CFL that I'd like to talk to you about. The first one being the news that sprung out today that the Montreal Alouettes and general manager Jim Popp have divorced, essentially. They have agreed to part ways after, 20 years now with the Montreal. He's the only GM they've known. Jim Popp is no longer the general manager of the Montreal Alouettes. The speculation can begin on who they will hire, but I think we should start off by just saying the last few years weren't great, but that man did a lot for football in Montreal, and I think he deserves respect for that.
He's done great things in Montreal over the past 20 some odd years. He's built winning teams, and like you said, it hasn't been that great. But I think that he put a lot of talent on the field the last couple of years. It's just that one missing piece that he's had trouble replacing. And I mean, you can't really replace Calvillo, but he hasn't. I mean, look at the quarterbacks that they went through. You know, Troy Smith, Crompton, Vernon Adams, Cato, Clavin Glenn. There's just been a lot of quarterbacks coming through that organization that didn't work out, and that was his major downfall, I believe. And you know, at some point the ownership lost trust in him, because the last couple of coaches that were hired besides him were not his call, from what I've heard. So I'm not super surprised to see him go, but he's done a lot of great things for Montreal, and I'm sure that if he wants it, he'll find a job real quickly in the CFL.
Talent evaluating is what he does best. Some of the guys that we never heard of before that he brought into this league: SJ Green, Bear Woods, Winston Venable, Chip Cox, like the list goes on and on. Daron Carter, say what you like about him, that guy's talented. He has found guys that can play ball. John Bowman's another guy that just the amount of talent this guy has brought into the league is second to none. And like you said, if he wants a job somewhere else, he will have it sooner rather than later. But these last few years, the inability to replace Anthony Calvillo, which is almost impossible. Calvillo was nearly irreplaceable, but you got to be able to find the next quarterback. You can't win in the CFL without quality quarterback play. And they just couldn't find the guy. They cycled through a number of players. You listed a bunch of them off the top of your head. And if one of those guys would have worked out, just one of them, Jim Popp is probably still in Montreal. But sometimes you just need a fresh start. The team needs a fresh start, and the guy himself needs a fresh start. So I don't know who they have in mind. It'll be interesting to see. I heard Danny McChoach's name floated out there as a possible candidate, but he said that he'll listen, but he's not agreeing to anything yet. He's still coaching the University of Montreal while they're in the CIS, or U Sports, I guess now, playoffs. So who knows who the next GM will be of the Montreal Alouettes, but it'll be interesting watching to see who they bring in, because say what you want about Jim Popp the last few years, those are some big shoes to fill.
Oh, yeah. A huge shoes to fill. I mean, this team was the model franchise for a long, long time. I remember hating them because they were always in first place in the East and always in the Grey Cup. So you're right. It'll be interesting to see if they go with, you know, Danny Machocha and Jacques Champlain, you know, two francophone guys that might appeal to the French audience in Montreal. So there's some names floating around. I think it's going to be another interesting offseason with Tressman being fired and, you know, maybe openings in Toronto. So I think that Jim Popp has done a fabulous job over the years, and he should be commended for it. He should be held up in the highest respects by Montreal fans, because that amount of success doesn't come around very often, as we know, as Ticat fans. So to be that successful over that stretch of period, that stretch of time, is huge.
Yeah, whenever he decides that he is done helping out in the CFL, being a GM, being whatever it is, they should start making his bust, because that guy has had a Hall of Fame career as a builder in this league. And all the respect in the world to Jim Popp. We've taken our shots at him as a head coach, but as a general manager and as a guy who scouts talent, Second to none, man. Second to none. Another interesting development out there is the maybe impending divorce between the Saskatchewan Roughriders and their franchise quarterback, Darian Durant. There's been a ton of rumors floating out that the Riders want him back, but at a lower salary. Durant wants to be compensated for the years that he has taken pay cuts in order for the team to be able to bring other guys in. Chris Jones might not like it. It's very, very complicated. How do you see this playing out? Do you think the man that they call Doubles out there in Saskatchewan will be wearing Rider green next year? Is he donning a different uniform?
If I had to bet, I'd say that he'd be back with the team. You know, that there's talk about James Franklin maybe going to Saskatchewan, but you informed me that he still has a year left on his contract in Edmonton, so they'd have to give up some draft picks, and they don't have the Canadian talent in Saskatchewan to really compete at this point, so those draft picks are important for them. So I'm going to have to say that Durant will be back for, you know, maybe he signs a 2-year contract. I hear that they're kind of apart on money or whatnot. But yeah, I think that he signs back. I just can't see them going into a new stadium with an unproven quarterback. I think that Durant is still a good quarterback, and he can you know, make the Riders competitive if he's healthy. So going into the new stadium, I got to say that they re-sign Durant.
My question for anyone who thinks Durant should be gone is simple. Who you replace him with? You mentioned James Franklin. Under contract for next year with the Edmonton Eskimos, both Dave Campbell, who's the play-by-play guy out for the radio station in Edmonton, Justin Dunk reported this weekend, same thing. He is locked up until the end of next season. So if you want to get him out of Edmonton, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. We have seen, especially this year, how important quality backup quarterback play is. We've seen it in Hamilton. We've seen it in Ottawa. We've seen the lack of it in both Toronto and Montreal. You need two quarterbacks in this league now. It's just the way it is. Guys are going to get hurt. Guys are not going to play a full season. You need a quality backup. James Franklin is a quality backup. He just went out and threw, what, 4 touchdown passes in a start this weekend? That's a guy who if you're the Edmonton Eskimos, you're going to lose him eventually because I think he's talented enough to be a starting quarterback. So you're going to lose him at some point. If you can get a King's Ransom for him, a roster player, a couple of high draft picks, then yeah, sure, you trade him and you bring someone else in and develop them. Fine. But you don't give this guy away for cheap, and he's not going to come cheap. And especially if a team like the Riders want him, a team in your division, yeah, you can make that trade, but you're going to fleece them for as much as you can possibly get. If Drew Willey and Vernon Adams go for first-round picks, and Drew Willey went for a first-round pick, a third-round pick, and a roster player, what can James Franklin get with the sky being the limit? We know what Drew Willey's capable of. James Franklin has only shown us glimpses. He's not going to come cheap. So let's take the James Franklin option off the table. Who's out there left? The other free agent quarterbacks this year, it's Matt Nichols, it's Kevin Glenn, it's guys like that, not guys who I think are the long-term solution. I also think both those guys are going to end up back in Winnipeg anyway, but Drew Willey is a guy that could be cut. Ricky Ray, maybe he's available, but these guys aren't the long-term solution. So I say you got to bring back Durant. I like your idea, 2-year contract, give him a fair base salary, but then make it incentive-laden. He's missed a lot of time the last 3 years. Let him earn his money, and I don't think he would have a problem with that, but he wants to be compensated for the years of helping this team and this franchise build a competitive roster, and I don't see a problem with that. If he goes elsewhere, I don't think many Rider fans will blame him. Some will be ticked, because they always are, but if you're the Riders, I don't see any other options out there for you unless you're going to try to trade for a quarterback, and who's going to trade their backup quarterback to Saskatchewan, they know they're in a desperate situation. It's going to cost way too much. So Durant's got to be back there. If he's not, I think they've made a massive mistake.
Yeah, they're going to be in a lot of trouble if they're starting the year with, you know, Mitchell Gale or one of their backups. It's just, I think that they've assembled some talent there, and I think they have a shot at being a pretty good team next year. But if they don't have the right quarterback, they're going to stink again.
It's not going to matter. Look at that. Look at how good that defense is in Montreal. For the last 2 years, they have been awesome. Missed the playoffs both years because they could not get consistent quarterback play. It's just that simple. Either you have a quarterback or you don't, and if you don't, you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's it. That's the bottom line.
We've spent a lot of time in our game review talking about this, so let's get into our game preview. And it's a playoff game preview, Mike. It's the East semifinal. Ticats hosting the Edmonton Eskimos. Eskimos are coming to town for the second time in 3 weeks, so we know what this team is like, what they can do. We all remember the last time these two teams met here in Hamilton. It was a 29-26 victory for the Eskimos. This is the third time that the Edmonton Eskimos will cross over into the East. They are currently 1-1 in those games. Back in 2008, they beat the 8-10 Winnipeg Blue Bombers 29-21. And then in 2012, they lost to the 9-9 eventual Grey Cup champion Toronto Argonauts 42-26. So let's hope that the Ticats are going to make this 1-2. I guess I will kick things off by starting about talking about the offense and what they need to do. I think it's pretty simple, Mike, honestly. I think Zach Collaros needs to be Zach Collaros. You talked about how great he was against Montreal in his short time on the field. I think we just need to see a repeat of that in this game. I think if he can look like the Zach Collaros that we saw against Montreal in that short amount of time, I think they can have a shot in this. I think CJ Gable needs to be involved in the offense. We harp on this almost every game, but I think he needs to get his touches, and I think good things happen when Gable has the ball. And last but certainly not least, something you harp on all the time, and rightfully so, the offensive line's got to protect him, man. They need to give Collaros a chance to operate behind a steady offensive line. I don't know, as we talked about earlier, what the plan is regarding the ratio. Now that Fantuz is out, could we see that for Canuck O-line, or are we going to see Terrence Campbell back out there? Who knows? But regardless of the scenario, regardless of what we see, the five men who start need to keep number four clean. So if I was to sum this up, I say Zach needs to be Zach. Gable needs his touches, and they got to protect number four.
Yeah, you know what? I call me crazy, but I think we're going to see a lot of CJ Gable in this game. I think they're going to finally give in and run the ball more. I think they just have to. They have to with all this turnover at the receiver's position, and I think it'll help out the offensive line a ton if they're giving the ball to Gable. So we're not doing bold predictions this year, but my bold prediction is CJ Gable has a huge game and gets a ton of touches.
Well, we saw the last game against Edmonton that he was very successful early on, that first drive where they scored a touchdown. I think he had four carries. He had a bunch of yards. He was huge in the passing game, but they got away from the run because they got down. If they can keep that game close, like, I think we forget because of they made the comeback and then that horrendous call at the end of the game, how close that game was for the first little bit of that contest. Now, there was a few plays here or there that could have turned the momentum in Hamilton's favor. I think it's going to be a lot closer game. Maybe I'm just trying to be optimistic because I just want them so badly to win, but I think they have a shot to win this football game, and I think CJ Gable, I like your bold prediction, man. I think we saw against Edmonton a couple weeks ago, Gable can find his way around this defense, so yeah, I hope you're right. Defensively, Mike, what are your keys to this victory? Or this game? I'm getting ahead of myself and calling it a victory.
Well, I think that the most important thing is the defensive line needs to be on top of their game. They can't be not getting pressure on Riley, because if he has time back there with the weapons that he has in our secondary, it's going to get ugly. So the defensive line really needs to step it up in the middle, on the outside. You know, John Schick needs to still do his thing, and that's basically it. Because the way that we've seen the secondary play, I don't have any confidence that they're going to have a monster game if the defensive line doesn't play well and get pressure on Riley. Now, the obvious thing is shut down Bowman and Walker, but that's gonna be real tough. But also, John White is a hell of a running back. You know, we talked about it in the game preview a couple weeks ago, but you know, they have quite the 1-2 punch with Shakir Bell and John White. They're similar players. John White's a little bit, he runs into people more. He's more of a physical running back, I think, but he's a hell of a running back. So if we can get pressure on him, get the pressure off the secondary to cover guys for longer, then you know, we might have a shot at this.
Yeah, I got to agree with everything you said. It's Edmonton's offense is dynamic. They have talent all across the board. They have a very good offensive line. They have a great quarterback. They have a good running back, no matter who they put back there. They got those two beast receivers who were finished 1-2 in the league in receiving yards. And they have Brandon Zylstra, who you brought up a little bit earlier, who's also a very, very good player. This is going to be a test for Hamilton's defense. And you're right. If they can get pressure from the defensive line, I think that sets up everything else. And it'll be interesting to see. We've seen these two we've seen these two teams play twice. Very close games both times. Ticats made a comeback and won a massive game early in the season. They tried to do the same thing later in the season and came up short. I think we're going to see a pretty good football game. As long as things don't get out of hand early, I don't think either team pulls away from this game until at least the fourth quarter.
Yeah, for like an off-field thing is the crowd needs to be in it like from the start. I've noticed that I'm not there, but it seems to be like on TV that it's a little quiet at the you know, start of the games, maybe fans are losing confidence, which I don't blame them at all. But it seems a little tame in Tim Hortons Field lately.
I will echo that sentiment. It has seemed, I can say personally that I have not been as invested the last little while early on, especially because it's kind of, the team's just not performing, so it's harder to get up for it. However, this is playoff football. And if you can't get up for playoff football as a fan, I don't know what's wrong with you. Reports are there are less than 200 tickets remaining for this game. So even though this team is 7-11, even though this team has lost their last four at home, I got to give it up to the fans for still going out and buying tickets. The East final, the semifinal games, East and West, are usually pretty tough sells. I don't know if you've noticed that over there. Like Montreal a couple of years ago when they hosted it, couldn't sell it out. It's a tough sell. So for the fact that Ticat fans, and I'm sure a few Eskimo fans as well, are scooping up tickets to where it's almost a sellout this early in the week, that I got a round of applause for all the fans who are buying tickets and still sticking by this team. It just shows me that playoff football and football in the hammer, just it still does mean something. So you're going to get those people who are going to this playoff game. Maybe it's their first game of the year, but I think this crowd is going to be at full throat. And if the Ticats can get a little something going early, I think you could see the crowd make a real big contribution to a victory here.
Yeah, you know, get up early and the crowd will get behind the team. I'm sure of it. Yeah, like you said, it's great to see that they're selling tickets still. And I think that Bob Young and Scott Mitchell and all the people that work in the front office have really built up the brand over the years. And it's pretty strong right now. If they keep, having losing seasons like this, I'm sure it'll drop off. But at this point, the fans are a really intense team, and there's a lot of them.
Well, here's the one thing that we can take into this. No matter how bad this team has been, they have not lost a playoff game at Tim Hortons Field yet. They have not lost a home playoff game under Kent Austin yet. So I'm sure at some point those things will end. This season has been the mystique of Tim Hortons Field has definitely gone away, especially in the last year after Caleros got hurt. But I can still cling to the fact they're undefeated at home in the playoffs. So I'm just saying, maybe that's some good omens for this team. This team could sure use a good omen every now and then.
Yeah, the way that this season has gone, yeah, I totally agree. And I don't recall if there's ever been a – I know that there's been an 8-10 team that's won the Grey Cup, Calgary, when they're led by Marcus Crandall. And I forget what year that was, but I know that they played against Winnipeg in Montreal.
It was 2001, and it was the year after the 8-10 BC Lions beat the Alouettes
in
the Grey Cup. We had back-to-back 8-10 teams win the Grey Cup.
Yeah, I was at that game in Calgary for the BC win, but that's very odd to have two 8-10 teams win it 2 years in a row, but I can't remember a team with a worse record than that winning the Grey Cup. So maybe this is, I'm not saying they're going to win the Grey Cup, but maybe this is a record-making playoffs.
I don't think they didn't win the Grey Cup, but I think there was like a 3-13 Rough Riders team to the Grey Cup against that like juggernaut Eskimos that won five in a row. And they were up like 20-3 at halftime or something. And the Eskimos made this big comeback and won the game, but it was like, That's the beauty of football, is that it's one game and anything can happen. A bounce doesn't go your way, and I don't care how many games you won in the regular season, you're out. And like everyone's saying, Calgary, Calgary, Calgary. There's some teams in that West, one team in particular we're going to talk about when we do our picks in a second, that I think could spoil Calgary's coronation this year. And you never know. You never know. That have the Ticats proven this year that they're good enough to win a Grey Cup? Absolutely not. But it's playoff time. They have a lot of guys in this team that are playoff test. There are guys that have been on this team for 3 years now that they know how to win in the playoffs. Anything can happen, man. Anything can happen.
Yep. One and done. So they're just going to have to put their best performance together and see what happens.
For sure. For sure. Hopefully we sit down next week and we're talking about a preview of the East final between the Ticats and the Red Blacks. But we'll have to wait and see. That's next week. Stick into this week. Let's get our picks out of the way. We will, before we make our picks for the playoffs, I got a final standings update. We have our winner of our pick'em pool. It is Cappy D. I have been informed that he is not necessarily all that interested in our prize pack. He is not a Ticats fan, so I don't believe he will want our t-shirts, but if I'm incorrect, I've been given false information, Cappy D, please hit me up and let me know, and send me your address and I will send you the toque and the t-shirt. If he doesn't want it, it then will go to the man that finished in second place in our pool, except that person was me. I finished in second place, so I said at the beginning of the year when I decided to hand out this cool prize pack, I was ineligible, I couldn't win it. So it now then will fall to the man in third, and drum roll please, that is our buddy Mark, who is in our Fantasy Football League and who I have met a number of times. He finished third. So Mark, if you're listening to the show and Cappy D does indeed not want the t-shirt and the toque, I will hit you up. I will message you and we will meet up probably at the game on Sunday, and I will give you your t-shirt and your toque. Mike, you didn't have a terrible season. You finished in 15th place, which after that strong start, I'm sure you're very disappointed in, but you can't win them all. Kudos to you on some of your picks. I hope you had fun doing it this year. I hope this was a fun segment for you, and I hope that we get it to do it again next year.
Yeah, I haven't looked at my overall record, but you know, I think I was above 500. So
You were. I actually looked that for you. You were 41-39 on the year, so not too bad.
Not terrible. You know, it's a little disappointing, but you know, there's always next year, right?
Always next year. Like just like the Chicago Cubs used to say, there's always next season. Of course, now as we know, not to bring too much baseball on this, the Cubs won the World Series, and that made me as a Cubs fan very, very happy. So anyway, maybe next year you break your personal curse. You finish first in the pool.
Hopefully.
No Billy Goat for you though, right?
No Billy Goat. No.
All right, are you ready to make these playoff picks? We won't be one and done. We'll be making these picks for the rest of the playoffs, but two teams out of these four will be going home on Sunday. So the first one is, of course, the East semifinal here in Hamilton between the Eskimos and the Ticats. Mike, who do you have in this one?
If I'm picking with my heart and going with the Ticats, I'm going to pick with my head and I'm going to say the Eskimos. I just can't justifiably think of a reason why Hamilton would win this game. You know, we know that it's anything can happen in one game series, but if you're just looking at the two teams, yeah, you got to pick the Eskimos.
I couldn't agree with you more. The smart play, the right thing to do is to pick Edmonton, but I can't do it. I can't, in good conscience, pick the Eskimos. I have to pick the Ticats. I know I'm probably going to be wrong. I don't have any confidence in this team to win this game, but I can't do it. I will gladly take the L in this if it means I get to pick the Ticats, but the W, if I was to win this one, would be that much sweeter. It's just I just can't do it. I can't.
Yeah.
Not in the playoffs. That's understandable. Not in the playoffs. I haven't picked the Ticats. I think a couple games this year I didn't pick Hamilton. Maybe one or two. I think you picked against them a couple of times as well. We're homers. It's too tough. It's too tough not to pick them.
Yeah, I completely understand that.
And I understand your logic that the Eskimos are a better football team and probably should win this football game, but who knows? The West semifinal. This one to me has all the markings of a potential classic. Winnipeg at BC. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I got to go with BC. They look very impressive to me. Their defense is great. Their offense is loaded with talent. You know, name the guys. Jeremiah Johnson looks awesome. Jonathan Jennings is really coming into his own. I don't think anyone throws a deep ball better than him in the CFL right now. You got Arsenault, you got Burnham, you got Sean Gore. Just so much talent on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. And then you got Chris Rainey running back, kick returns. So listen, Winnipeg's a good team, and I was pretty high on them before the season started. But I just think that BC is a notch above them, talent wise, coaching wise, everything. So I gotta go with BC.
Manny Arsenault has been unstoppable in the second half of the season. I think he's got a touchdown in 8 straight games, which is absolutely incredible. I think the only way BC doesn't win this game is if Jonathan Jennings reverts to being the young quarterback that he is. If he has a good game, I'm not saying he has to throw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. If he just plays mistake-free football, doesn't turn the ball over, or maybe throws one interception, I think the Lions win this, no doubt. But kudos to Winnipeg. What a great year they had. If they win this game, won't surprise me one bit. They're a very talented team. But in the slight edge, I'm going to give it to BC because you just listed all those reasons, all those talent on offense, the talent on defense, special teams. This is a team, and now they have Paul McCallum back, so the kicking game is much more steady. This team is without many flaws. Like it's hard to pinpoint something on this team that there's not to like, and they're the team to me. They're the dark horse team to win this whole darn thing. I could easily see them going into Calgary and getting the win, but they got to get this one first. And I think in what will be a very entertaining football game, I think the Lions take this one.
Yeah, and it might have been different if it was in Winnipeg, because you never know about the weather and all that stuff, or the crowd back in them. I'm sure there'd be a big crowd in Winnipeg. I hope the BC Lion fans show up for this game in BC. But yeah, you look at Jennings and the BC Lions, and they could have beat Calgary in one of those games if he hadn't have thrown that late interception. And there was another game where he threw a couple late interceptions as well. So like you said, if he can just control the ball, not turn it over, and play his game, I think that BC's gonna go pretty deep in the playoffs.
So, speaking of Calgary, we have one question this week, and it is about a player from Calgary. It's about Bo Levi Mitchell. So, Mark, a guy who asks us, not Mark from earlier, a different Mark, who asks us questions rather frequently, he, simple question, Mike, and I'll throw it to you. Do you think Bo Levi Mitchell will get a shot at the NFL?
I think that, there might have been offerings before he signed that contract with Calgary. He signed a long-term contract for quite a bit of money, I'm certain. I think that he's happy with his situation in Calgary. Now, do I think he could play in the NFL? Maybe. You never know. The right talent around him, I think that he's a very talented dude, but I don't necessarily see it happening for Bo Levi Mitchell. I think that he's happy where he is. I think that he is a dominant player in this league, and I think that he loves playing for the Calgary Stampeders.
I couldn't agree with you more. I just think his game is suited so well for the CFL. He's got a big arm, but not too big. I think he benefits from the wider field. I think he benefits, well, I think he obviously benefits from the situation he's in. I think he benefits from the motion and the extra player. He also strikes me as a guy who wouldn't go to the NFL simply to go to the NFL. He strikes me as a guy that wants to play. And his best opportunity is the CFL to play. I think he's got the talent. We've seen some guys get shots in the NFL that I was like, how the hell did they get down there? But they either don't make it or some of them do in a number of cases where I was just like, that was surprising. But I think with Mitchell, like, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve a shot at the NFL. I think, like you said, he's very happy in Calgary. I think he's very happy in the CFL. I think he'll be a well-compensated player in the CFL. Obviously, not as well-compensated as he would be in the NFL. But he signed a 4-year contract extension a couple years ago. That's going to take him until his late 20s. Maybe he flirts with the NFL then. I don't know. But I just think that he's tailor-made for this league. I think he's going to be like Anthony Calvillo, who we talked about earlier, a guy that plays here 10 to 15, upper close to 20 years, and becomes one of the all-time greats in this league. Because if he continues on the path he's on now, he will go down as one of the best quarterbacks ever played in the CFL, and I think he's here for the long haul. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve a shot at the NFL. I just think he's happy in the CFL.
Yeah, the only way that I could see it is he sticks around for his contract in Calgary, wins a couple Grey Cups, and thinks, well, I've done all I can do up here. Maybe I'll take a shot. Doug Flutie was,
Big fish in a small pond, right?
I mean, Doug Flutie was. I'm pretty sure he was in his 30s when he signed with the Buffalo Bills. That doesn't happen very often. That was kind of a fluke, but you never know.
Well, and Flutie, we have to remember, had some unfinished business in the NFL. He was very unhappy with how his original NFL tenure ended. With they didn't see him as a guy who could play down there, which is foolish because talent is talent, and that dude had talent. I don't care if he was 5'4" or whatever it was. Dude could play ball, and we saw it up here, and then we saw it when he got his second opportunity in the NFL. So he kind of had a chip on his shoulder that he wanted to prove that he could do it down there, and he had done everything in the CFL: 6-time MOP, multiple-time Grey Cup champion. And yeah, maybe that could happen with Mitchell too. If he's going to win the MOP this year, I think it's a no-brainer. I think he'll probably be close to unanimous, if not a unanimous selection. I'm going to vote for him for MOP, simply because there's no one in the East, no matter who gets the nomination, that'll be worthy of it over Mitchell. If he wins, say, maybe he wins this MOP, wins the next two after that, wins a Grey Cup or two here. So three championships, three MOPs. Maybe then you're right. He does decide, I've done all I can do up here. I want to challenge myself some more. But who knows? Is he going to sit and ride the pine until he's 31 in the NFL? I can't see it. I think he would be a guy who would go down there if he didn't like it, he'd just come back. And it would be interesting, though, to see Calgary without him. Drew Tate still there. Tate take the reins because people don't seem to have all that high of opinion on Drew Tate. You named him your bozo last week for his horrendous performance in the season finale for the Stampeders. But I just want to see the best players possible play up here, and Mitchell is obviously one of the best. I just don't see him going anywhere. I think that the fire burns in him to play, and I don't think he would get the opportunity to play as much as he would in the CFL as he will in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's not going to – there's always going to be a guy that a team has sunk in a lot of money to that's going to be ahead of him. The only way he probably get a chance is if he makes, you know, a second string, third string job and someone – a couple people get injured. And then he plays really well and, oh, my God, look at this guy. But other than that, you know, I don't really see it happening. Now, if I had to bet on a quarterback now that – would have a future in the NFL, maybe. I think it should be Jennings because, to me, he has all the tools. He has a strong arm. He's pretty darn accurate. He's a tall guy. He's mobile. So, if I had to bet on a quarterback that would be in the NFL in the future, it would probably be Jennings.
I agree with you on that one too. Man, it's the agreement episode almost entirely. Yeah. I just think also age. Jennings is what, 23, 24? So even though he signed a contract extension with the Lions, it could be a situation where he plays out that contract and gets an opportunity down south because of the age. The age, I think, plays a big factor in whether these guys go down or not. Like you said, Flutie went down as he was in his 30s, but that is an anomaly. They want guys who probably at their oldest are like 26. Mm-hmm. And especially at the quarterback position, because you want a guy that's going to be playing for you for 10, 15 years. You don't want a guy that's going to come in, play for you for 5 years, and then be out of the league. So, yeah, Jennings makes the most sense out of the guys who are up here right now. But I think again, that's a guy whose skill set I think is also really well suited for the CFL, and it would be a shame to lose him. But as long as Wally's in BC, he'll find quality quarterbacks, and he unearthed Jennings, he unearthed Mike Riley, Travis Lule, Casey Brenners. The list goes on and on of the guys that he brought into this league that were MOP candidates and Grey Cup champions and all that sort of stuff. So it's tough. It's tough to see guys leave, but yeah, I think I'm with you. I think Jennings could be the one guy that's currently playing quarterback from CFL that could get a shot down south.
Yeah, and I think that he has the opportunity to just get better. I think Travis Lule is a guy that would really, you know, take him under his wing and mentor him and give him all the help he needs, not like some other, you know, former starting quarterbacks that would just be kind of jealous of his success. And like you said, Wally Buono's there. He's groomed quarterbacks before, so I think that there's nowhere but up to go for Jennings.
For sure. But there's nowhere for us to go but out. We are done, Mike. That's it for this week. Remember, everyone out there, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to throw a question at Mike or myself, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, let everyone know where they can find you there, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at joshsmith_82. And of course, be like Mark, and you can post a question in the comment section of 3 Down Nation. So Mike, that was episode 64 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.